Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Anarchy Series with Freedom Fiends Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
So, Nima, how are you feeling on this wonderful coronation day for King George the VII, Obama?
You know, it's been a great day for me so far. I woke up and, you know, my morning routine is drink coffee, sit on the toilet and look at my phone. And, you know, my Obama phone. No, but my phone, it had on my Facebook, somebody posted, I think it was Frank, posted a great story about Lupe Fiasco, who was doing an event. It was an Obama coronation event. It wasn't the official one, but it was in D.C.
How the hell did he get invited? Did they go, oh, a black rapper. We'll have him.
I think so, yeah.
They didn't know he hates Obama and called him racist and put him in the same box as Glenn Beck, but worse.
I guess, yeah. The booking dude must have been like, oh, black rapper. We need to have lots of those for our Obama coronation ceremony. But he was apparently jamming, and he had like a drummer with him and like a keyboard, like a full live band.
It didn't sound very good, man. I'll say that.
Yeah. It sounded good. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it was the YouTube video was like a recording somebody did off of a phone.
I know that. I took that into account. I just thought the performance didn't sound very good.
Ah, okay. Well, you know, he's Lupe, so maybe he was nervous at the, maybe he saw the security guards or the Secret Service guards eyeing him at that point, because what he did was they were just jamming apparently for like 30 minutes, and it wasn't like one particular song, I don't think. He was just like spitting out his best anti-war, anti-Obama, anti-establishment lines. It was like they invited him as a court jester, and he's just sitting there ragging on the establishment, and it must have been fucking great. And he got kicked off. Security
must have been
like,
friggin' great. Friggin' great.
Yeah, friggin' great.
We're trying
great.
Not to curse. We're literally trying not to curse, and we're practicing
literally.
It.
Literally.
And I forgot that I have to tell you before every show. I would think I'd be the one you'd have to tell me, but...
I could switch it on and off, but I forget. And I'm so used to...
Switch it off.
All right. Click.
Radio. Right. So,
click. Click. Click.
Thank you.
All right. It's off. No more cussing.
We'll see. I'll fine you.
First, you got to find me.
One Bitcoin. Yeah. I'll send Cody Wilson, the printable gun guy, over there.
There you go. But that made my day. It made my day to see that and read that and think of Lupe as a hero. So that was my hero worship today. It wasn't Mr. Barack Obama. And
so you want to know how I am today?
Yeah, it's been a bad day for you. But after that, I went to eat lunch with my wife. They weren't playing the coronation at the Mexican restaurant we went to. They were playing a basketball game. So I was like, good. I haven't seen anything about it thus far. I'm not really Facebook friends with idiots. At least they don't get shown on my newsfeed. So my wife was all like, man, I wish I could be as naive as all my Facebook friends and just think, oh, how pretty the lotus is.
I am now. I got off Facebook, so I am as naive. I'm naive, like, you know, political, like, atheist, like, I don't even know what's going on. Although, right. I know that Obama got coronated today, and I'm like, I feel physically sick. I really do. I didn't
do
think
you?
I'd
why?
Feel that strong. I
don't
why
do,
know, man.
Why do you feel so sick?
I need some hope, not his kind of hope. And he fills me with the opposite of hope, man.
He does.
We'll get into that, but.
Yeah, I mean, if it weren't him, it'd be somebody else who'd be just as bad. I guess the only sad thing about him is
exactly
is there's a lot of people that do worship him, but There were so many people that worshiped George Bush, too. Like, my aunt thought he was a white knight in shining armor and was sent here by Jesus to save us from the evil Muslims.
Man.
No, she was crazy, man. She would watch John Hagee late at night, and they were fell on hard times once and had to come live with us, and she shared a room right next to my room. Like, we shared a wall, and I would just hear John Hagee at night calling on us to start World War III so that Armageddon can come.
How do you spell that? Hagee?
H-A-G-E-E. He's awful. Oh, he's awful. He's got quite a following.
He's a pastor with a radio show, huh? Radio and television.
He's a televangelist, and he's a big... I guess you call him an Israel firster. I don't know, but it's really disingenuous, too. I mean, the Israel lobby likes to use these people as useful idiots, but the way they really feel, like in Hagee's worldview, from what I can tell of it, he wants to use American foreign policy and any power he can grab to start a big conflict between, you know, Iran and Israel, or whoever will fight with Israel, so it can turn into a world war, because that's what the end time says, that it'll be a battle between East and West.
You know, I've heard of people that believe that, but I thought it was something made up by liberals. That there's really people like that?
Yeah, my aunt Desi, she is one of them, and she learned it from John Hagee. And yeah, man, but the thing is, like I said, the Israel lobby is all like, yeah, let's use them, let's talk about them, let's give them a platform to say these things. But what they really want is, in their mind, after the Armageddon happens, the Jews have to convert and love Jesus, or they die too and go into hellfire.
You know, that sounds as absurd to me as the Helter Skelter plan. Do you know what... Charlie Manson's plan was? He actually had a plan with his murders.
He had a plan?
Yeah, the plan was...
A plan that went further than murder.
Oh, yeah. He was, like, he was religious, and he kind of thought he was Jesus, or that mm-hmm. there'd be a second coming of Jesus, and he was a prophet or something. And he was obsessed with the book of Revelation, and there's a Beatles song called Revolution Number 9, and he thought it was about Revelation Chapter 9. And he had all these interpretations of, like, you know, it says in the book of Revelation, like, in the end times there will be, you know, warriors who will come with the hair, men with the hair of women, and, you know, he thought that was the hippies and the Beatles, and, you know, with breastplates of iron, and he said that was the Beatles guitars, and riding on winged chariots, and he said that was the dune buggies that he and his crew were using to get around out in the desert. And he believed what he wanted to do was to start a race war between blacks and whites, and that would bring the Armageddon, where he'd be able to insert himself as, like, the world leader or the prophet or Jesus.
I think I kind of vaguely do remember the race war thing, but this is a lot more detail than I
and he thought that he could accomplish a race war by, you know, killing a couple Hollywood celebrities and writing Beatles lyrics on their wall in blood. I don't know how that would cause a race war, but he believed it would.
Right.
But it kind of sounds like, you know, the LSD hippie, you know, violent hippie version of the John Hagee idea.
Yeah, the similarities being, let's start World War III, or let's start some giant war so that we can insert ourselves as the powerful in the aftermath kind of thing.
And, you know, there's a lot of people talking about the gun grabbing of Obama as leading to a glorious battle, you know, an American Civil War II or Revolutionary War I, you know, II, that will, you know, free us all. And even Ron Paul was almost saying that on Alex Jones. I mean, he wasn't saying it as, like, you know, it'll bring freedom, but he was basically saying this could lead to, you know, Civil War II.
Right, but I don't think he was saying it as a threat, like that New York mayor who was saying, yeah, there'll be some Waco-style stuff, man. You know, I think Ron Paul was just saying, you know, beware the Ides of March.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't think anybody should be happy about something like that. Nobody should be looking forward to any kind of violent revolution.
No. We're mellow. You know, we're peace loving.
It's not just mellow, but you never get anything good out of it. As far as I've seen in history, I mean, even after the American Revolution, what you had right after that was just a bigger tyranny, where the taxes were more and the wars were more, and it ended up being what it is now. you know, in Iran in 1979, all the students thought they were going to get freedom and not have a giant police state and not have to follow a bunch of rules. And they got the Islamic Republic, where they had more rules. You know, it seems to always happen that way. You have a violent revolution, and because you're using violence to achieve your means, you end up with a violent state, because that's what the state does. It uses violence to achieve its means.
So I'm having a horrible day to where I was literally physically sick in my stomach because of Obama. I stayed up all night watching CSI Miami, you know, the Stato show, and then slept about 4.5 hours, got up, was just physically ill. I was like, oh, I'll just ignore Obama's coronation. It won't bug me, but I feel ill.
That's what I'm doing.
And then you were
Obama
just...
Obama gave me disease.
You were astonished at what I was doing to kill time. In light of all this, while waiting to do a show with you when you got back from lunch, what am I doing with my time today to calm myself?
Your freaking taxes, man. you're like telling me how bad you feel about Obama's coronation, and you're like, oh, hold on, I'm paying my taxes.
Hold on. I have to fund his second term.
Right,
I have to fund the gun grabbing.
I lost my form 1040 Easy XYZ B number 2.
Yeah.
We
actually pay someone to do it, but I have to, you know, do all the...
Compile the crap
onto one page and send it to him. And I actually did better this year than I've done in a while.
Good.
A lot of side jobs, made a little money at the Fiends. We put most of the money back into the Fiends, but
we made money on the Fiends. It's just, yeah, we put it right back into the Fiends, which is what you do, I think, when you're starting something or when you're early at something. I mean, that's what everybody says, right? Reinvest it back into your project so your project can get bigger.
Yeah.
Only take the cream off the top once the project's about where you want it to be.
I feel like once we're kicking butt with this and on radio and start making a name for ourselves and on the cover of Talkers magazine, I feel like Obama's just going to outlaw talk radio. I'm afraid of it, man.
We wouldn't stop, would we? I wouldn't stop.
Well, we wouldn't stop doing... We'd go back to podcatting, but he'd probably make that illegal. I don't know. If I'm going to get droned or jailed for something, it's going to be something that is currently legal, unless they plant something on me, because I still don't break any laws. You know, and I'm not saying that proudly. It's just like I happen to not, other than the like everybody commits 3 felonies a day because, you know, you have like some species of dandelion that's outlawed in your state growing in your yard and you don't even know it's there. That kind of law. But I don't break any drug laws. I don't break any gun laws. I pay my taxes. And I'm not saying that like I'm a good upstanding. It's more like I don't want to get droned. You know, I don't want to get jailed.
It almost seems like the best defense is to be crazy, you know, to seem kind of loopy and insane like Alex Jones. Like, I don't think Alex Jones would ever get droned or get into trouble.
I'll bet he pays his taxes.
I bet he pays his taxes.
I bet he has, like, accountants who do a really good job with it, do it really thoroughly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But because he's so, you know, on it, and liberals can point to him and be like, he's crazy, and you know, status of all stripes can do that, I think he's kind of safer like that. I mean, the establishment won't want to drone him because, A, it would make him sort of a martyr, and, B, they like the fact that he sort of makes the movement look like it's kind of, I don't even want to put a word there, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I guess the other thing would be to be inconsistent. The state will also let you get away with it, or the establishment will, if you're inconsistent. Like Glenn Beck and Limbaugh, you know, he'll be like, well, you know, look at how bad the economy is because of Obama, and look at all this, and he'll say data and stuff that's completely true, and then he'll be like, if only Republicans could get in office.
If only we had
a different style of status, then everything would be perfect.
I just sent you your 1099 or 1040. I just sent you how much I paid you out this year and how much I'm reporting and I'm reporting it on my taxes. So,
oh, are you serious?
I'm stealing time from the gray market to do my taxes. That's up to you.
Charge me.
I have to report it. It's up to you what you do. Yeah.
Well, if you report it, then it's in the books, and I have to do something with it.
Actually, you made just under $600, so I don't have to.
Oh, okay.
You made $580 or something. Which is not like any kind of, you know, special book cooking. It's just happened to be how it worked out.
Right. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, good. Then I won't do anything with it.
I think you're supposed to report it. If you made over 600, I'd have to request a W-4 from you, or a W-9 or a W-butt. I don't know what it's called, man. But speaking of being loopy, Lupe Fiasco, man, really kind of made my day.
Yeah, man. That's what I was saying. He totally made my day. I mean, that's a heroic thing. Cause...
Did we talk about that on the show yet? I know we talked about it beforehand.
Yeah. We did. That's what we started the show with.
I'm kind of like really, really disoriented by by the world today, by the president, by
the
punch in the gut of the coronation.
In queso emergency, that's what made me feel better. I went and ate some good Tex-Mex queso.
I ate good. I've eaten good today. Did you see the picture I sent you of the Obama humper, praying to Obama at the stage?
Oh, did I send you that? No. I'm trying to avoid looking at the coronation, man. I don't want to see that.
I don't know if we should use this as a... I don't know, man. No, it's like a CNN thing. They'll sue us. But it's this guy, like this hippie praying to God, it looks like. But it's taken from near the stage looking out.
Is he praying that Obama will stop killing so many kids?
I don't know. He kind of looks Muslim. I don't think he is. He has a wool cap on, but, you know, he has a beard. He just looks like a hippie to me.
Yeah, probably a hippie. An inconsistent, ignorant, naive hippie. He's bowing to Obama. Unless he's praying that Obama, I don't know, have a heart attack at that moment.
I doubt it. He's got an American flag, and he has this totally beatific... I mean, he looks like someone at a prayer service looking up at the altar.
Wow.
I sent it to you. Check it out. Check it out, man.
It's just completely sad, man. All right, I'm going to check it out. We can use it as fair use if people want to see it, can't we? Oh, jeez. Is this from today?
Yeah. Oh, it's one of like 90 pictures on the article.
Wow. So is that the news today? Is that what everybody in the mainstream is talking about? How's Fox covering?
I haven't listened. I really wonder. I have no idea. I don't want to have to get admitted to the emergency room for stomach problems. So I'm just taking Alka-Seltzer and not watching the news. But I did happen to see this on Twitter, and I was like, oh, man. Yeah. How'd you like those radio pictures I made of us? I'm going to use one of them instead because they're fun.
Okay. Yeah.
I basically went and like... In celebration of the Fiends are going to be on radio, I went and
found pictures of vaguely ethnic or facial haired people and used them as me, and pictures of white, old white people and used them as you.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, I searched like ham radio operator on Google Images and just found all these mostly old pictures. And like, you know, I'd find the 70-year-old fat white guy and put Michael underneath it and said, it says Fiends now on radio or coming to radio. and I made like five of them. And, you know, the old white guy is always on the left. And then the vaguely ethnic guy is on the right. Like one guy, I think one guy's got a handheld mic. I think he's like a police dispatcher in the Philippines or India.
Right. Yeah.
And then one of them like kind of looks like Che Guevara, you know, windowless bunker. And those are all you. Yeah, and one of them is just a white guy with a mustache sitting right next to a plump white guy, old white guy, and they're, you know, talking on radios. It's funny.
Yeah, I'm glad mustaches aren't... Well, I guess mustaches are kind of coming back, but I don't know. I look so much better with the beard. I'm glad I didn't wear it in the 70s, and the facial hair style was a mustache.
Just mustaches alone, it's some of my worst memories of the 70s.
Really? Did you ever have one?
No, I can barely grow one, man. I sent you a picture once of me with a mustache and a goatee, and it took me like 2 months to grow, and it looked like, you know, what most teenage boys get after like 10 days of not shaving, 6 days of not shaving. I mean, I'm not a very hairy guy, man. I mean, I have some hair on my chest now that I'm getting. I mean, like it sprouted when I was 40, you know, I got hair on my chest. Which is weird because I think I have a lot of testosterone because I'm always up for, you know, a roll in the hay. I never have problems producing a roll in the hay. And, you know, I'm an angry guy, which are all signs of having a lot of testosterone.
Is that how you think of a roll in the hay, producing it? Is that because you used to record it for a podcast?
Well,
you think of it. Let's go produce one, baby.
Did I say that? I could always produce. Did I say that?
You said I could always produce a roll in the hay.
I could always whip one out. I mean, I was trying to be polite, but yeah, I guess I was speaking radio speak.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. Places, everybody. Places.
Right. This is about to be a production up in this.
More pleasure, Janine.
More pleasure. I got a prescription.
Yeah.
Come up with something, but
I guess I have a lot of testosterone, but I'm not a very hairy guy. I don't know why. I think
maybe
I have
that's
a lot
the reason you have a lot of testosterone because it's not going to your hair follicles.
The reason I think I have a lot of testosterone is all the ads for testosterone replacement therapy for guys my age list symptoms that I absolutely don't have, and I'm actually quite the opposite. You know, I'm not
Michael Dean.
Yeah, I'm not low energy. I don't have a low sex drive. I don't have erectile dysfunction. you know, I still want to punch people. No, I'm kidding. I want to punch birds and squirrels.
Do you?
No.
Do you want to punch Obama?
No. No. You know what? I want him to leave me alone. I really do. I want to.
Yeah, man. Exactly.
I really do.
That's kind of the point of the video I'm making right now, which I was supposed to have done 2 days ago, but
I'll never set foot in Washington, D.C., first of all. Never.
Yeah.
I decided that before I even became a Liberty guy. I used to live there, man. That place is horrible. Horrible. Yeah.
Well, what is D.C., man? They're bullies. So what do you got to do to bullies? You just don't let them get to you, and eventually they'll go bully somebody else who will respond to their bullying.
Yeah. What I'm wondering is how we stay high profile and get higher profile while making the bullies not want to beat us up.
Well, you just don't let them beat you up. Like you said, you follow the rules as much as you can, as much as you know, which I guess can be kind of hard, you know, because books like Three Felonies a Day say that the system is just so set up and so many rules and regulations and restrictions that it's really hard to follow all the rules at all the time, even if you're just a normal average person. But I think the thing is, you know, you don't incite violence. You don't call for violence. You don't call for anything immoral. Other than, you know, I guess paying your taxes is kind of, I guess paying your taxes isn't immoral because the gun's to your head.
That's
the
a
tax
really
collectors
good
are immoral.
That, you just summed it up. And I argue with agorists, or they try to argue with me, who say, you know, you're not really a liberty person because you're doing this liberty media and you're making three figures at it. You know, you're making a high three figure income at doing it, you know, it's a few hundred dollars a year for your 80 hours a week of service and you're paying taxes on it. And I'm like, man, yeah. When, you know, someone's got a gun to your head. It's not immoral to not comply to the extent that you can to wiggle out of it and get away.
Right. I mean, you don't blame, well, I guess some people do, but that's a problem. It's not right to blame the girl getting raped, you know, if she's being physically beaten into it.
I know. The agorists are basically saying to me when I pay taxes, I'm asking for it by the way I'm dressed.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess the more you can avoid it, see, it's tricky, too, because I worry that there's goons and sting operations and police departments are so bloated that, you know, I used to, back in the day, not think twice about doing deals under the table and making money and not reporting it. But now I get kind of nervous. You know, a guy came up to me the other day and was talking to me about illegal taxi riding, and I didn't know if we wanted to do something together with it or, you know, you
I think
my
he was just asking
yours,
how but- much. Well, you said, explain what happened, and you called me about it and felt kind of freaked out about two different things in 2 days. Talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's go sell some of our juicy things and then come back and talk at length about this.
Ah, okay.
We have juicy things.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features, and corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's BolaVPN at BolaVPN.net.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
So, Nemo, what happened the other day when you were coming back to the pizza shop?
No, I wasn't coming back. It was like at 4 in the morning. I go out to my car, gonna smoke a cigarette. You know, I've been driving my wife's car, so I've been driving this big Cadillac sedan DeVille. It's like longer than Chevy Suburban.
The mileage probably makes it hard to make a lot of money at pizzas.
You know, I break even on mileage. I don't lose money on mileage because they do pay decent mileage. I profit when I drive the Hyundai. Like, I make more money from the mileage they pay me than I do in gas, than I spend in gas. But nevertheless, guy pulls up to me.
I'm doing my taxes.
Okay. He's an oldish man, looks maybe fit between 50 and 60, kind of plump, maybe like 200 pounds-ish or more. Has a sweater vest. It's got like a Cosby design on it. And he's got one of those noses that's kind of bulbous and has like weird marks on it. You know what I'm talking about? Like an old man nose and glasses.
Yeah.
And he leans out the window of his Ford Taurus or whatever it was. And he's like, "How much you make tonight?" And I was like, well, I did all right, you know, 80, 90 in tips, $30 in mileage, and, you know, I get paid minimum wage, too, while I do it. So, you know, 170, something like that, if you include all that. And he's like, "Oh, I made 200, blah, 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 250 doing illegal taxi rides. You know, after my mileage, it'll be like 230. And I'm like, "Oh, good for you." And so we sort of talk a little bit about how he does it and what he does. And he's like, "Yeah, sometimes people think I'm a pedophile or a sex offender." Because I was asking him, you know, how do you get people to do it? And he's like, "I just roll up to people who are walking and ask them if they need a ride. And I guess then they negotiate a price after that." And I was telling him, you know, "When I drive around, people just always wave at me. So maybe you should put like a pizza car topper on your car or something like that. Maybe you get more business." And we were just talking about this, but I had this weird feeling. I didn't want to tell him too much. And I felt kind of like, does the man know that, or that I've been thinking about doing a taxi? Because we did that podcast where I was talking about how I want to start a taxi business.
I don't think the man knows who you are, man. That, you know, that's one thing. I have not heard, and this is good, I have not heard of any ANCAPs being busted and targeted for being ANCAPs. I've heard of, you know, ANCAPs who are cop blockers being busted for being out yelling at cops in their face and filming them.
Right. Or Stacey Litz, who Stacey was busted Litz, for being drug dealer.
Right. But they didn't target her. "Oh, she's a libertarian." Right. They were like, "Oh, someone's getting drugs through the mail." You know, and we generally so far have been pretty much left alone in that way, whereas left anarchists get targeted a lot.
Right. But even if it's not specifically targeting me, I still feel like it's possible it could be some kind of sting that's not targeting me, but is a sting targeting people who may be at risk for breaking these regulations. Because I know it happens. I know it happens that pizza delivery drivers will sometimes give people rides for money. And I know that taxi drivers can see that because they inhabit the same spaces and are at the same places and looking for the same customers.
I have a theory about two possible things that was really going on, other than that they were trying to do a sting operation. One is, you know, because you said that the guy was complaining about some aspect of doing business under the table, right?
He did say he had gotten a ticket.
And he just pulled up and he asked you how much you made. I think it was one of two things. I think it was either he was a guy who has this job, but it's getting harder and harder to do the gray market thing. And mm-hmm. he's trying to see if I go legit,
if it's
viable. That's possibility one. I think possibility two is he was looking for pizza drivers with a bunch of cash to rob.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would not answer a stranger on the street who said, "How much did you make tonight?" I'd be like,
right.
I'd either, you know, depending on how much I thought I could get away with them, my initial reaction would probably be none of your friggin' business.
Right.
If I thought they were someone who would get like angry or violent if I said that, I'd probably lie and say like, "It's company policy, man. I could get fired if I tell you, and I'm right in front of the store. Sorry." Yeah.
And I totally think you're right about that, and it's a habit I need to break. But I do encounter a lot of other service industry folks, you know, waiters, other delivery people, and we talk because, you know, it's like we're at work together when we're all downtown at night. And so bartenders or whoever will talk to me about that kind of stuff, and we'll both be honest about it and tell each other so that we can feel out where the money is. And I saw this guy as a fellow industry guy because I guess I took his word for it initially. But yeah, you're right. That is not the best of habits. But yeah, those two things are probably the most simple and probably the most reasonable, and that's probably what happened. And I didn't really think much about it. Then the next night, I think something that was more likely a sting, because I know police have a big history of doing stings like this, I got Hey Mister'd at a 7-Eleven. I went to buy a 40-ounce after my shift, and this guy follows me out, like he's walking around the 7-Eleven the whole time, follows me out. He's a tall dude, maybe like 6'2", and like kind of muscly, like thick looking, but he talked kind of like he was flamboyant, I guess would be the word. He was kind of fruity in how
flamey,
he talked.
Flamey.
Yeah, yeah, but he was like, "Could you do me a favor?" And I was like, "Sure, man, what's up?" And he's like, "Well, you know, it'd just be nice if I could get a hold of a nice Moscato or something. That's the wine my girlfriend really likes."
How old did he look?
He looked like he was of college age, like maybe a freshman, 18. I don't know. He could have been between 18 and 22 would be the range I'd put him in. But, you know, I said, "Hey, man, I mean, I don't think that there's anything wrong with doing that. I just have a bad feeling about this. So you should try somewhere else. Sorry, buddy." And left. But he looks pretty disappointed. But, you know, cops do that. There are news stories about it. In fact, I've done a news story about it back in Walla Walla, Washington. The State Department of Liquor or whatever would do that. They would send kids into wineries of all places. Like that's the evil happening place is these wine tasting rooms. Oh, we got to keep the kids away from these wine tasting rooms. And
well, what probably happened was they clamped down so hard on stores that some kids figured out, "Oh, we can go into the winery, and if we're dressed well, they'll serve us." Yeah. And, you know, they screw one thing up for everybody.
Right.
You know, it pops a bubble out somewhere else, so they have to go pop that bubble back down. Yeah.
They're always chasing that, though. I mean,
it never goes away. You know, it's like when there's a crack corner and they send out undercovers to that crack corner, and the crack dealers just move three blocks up, you know.
Yep.
And what do? You just keep moving them till they're in the ocean. It doesn't work that way. You know, go somewhere
else.
Well,
they just go to different neighborhoods.
They go online and go to Silk Road.
Right. Somebody on the Lou Rockwell blog did a post about that. You know, people are complaining about crack houses and, "Oh my God, how awful drugs are, because then we have these crack houses." And it's like, no. Do you have, you know, pharmacy houses? Do you have liquor houses? No, you don't, because there's some kind of above board market opportunity for that.
I lived upstairs from a crack house. It was not pleasant, but it was actually...
It's not pleasant, but it's not the crack's fault, and it's not the crack dealer's fault. It's the government's fault.
Yeah, but these are obnoxious people anyway. I think if they were not on crack, they would have been obnoxious. But it was unlike most crack houses where it's a dilapidated building and they, you know, chase the owner out and get him on crack and then kick him out of his own house and take it over until it's foreclosed and then stay there and then keep partying next to dead bodies, which actually happens. Mm-hmm. This was a business. It was a barbershop. And it, you know, it was there for years. Right, I mean, I think it'd been there for decades, and, you know, the last 5 years of it, the owner, who was like 75-year-old black man who was on an oxygen tank, you know, got into crack, and suddenly his barbershop started keeping much later hours. Let's put it that way. Mm. You know, most barbershops close at like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. This one literally stayed open all night playing Motown music and smoking crack all night.
Nice. Well, you know what it is?
It's selling it.
It's a GME. You know how people don't like to eat foods with GMOs? It's a GME. It's a government manufactured environment.
A genetically operational crack house?
No, a government manufactured environment. It's an environment that wouldn't exist unless the government was forcing the market into different behaviors, forcing people into different patterns of behaviors because they're avoiding the gun. I stole that from Molyneux. He said it the other day as off the cuff, and I thought it was really funny. A GME, a government manufactured environment.
Yeah, that's a lot of environments. Now, I still think it's really funny what the cops said about that crack house. Yeah. I generally don't have much nice to say about cops, but this was pretty funny. It was my roommate got busted buying a joint on Haight Street by an undercover tie-dye, long hair, bearded cop. And they didn't, but they, you know, they took him to the shop and questioned him and gave him a ticket. And they were like, what's your address? And he said his address. And he's like, the cop's like, oh, that's below the bar. That's above the barbershop, isn't it? And he goes, yeah. And he says, we've had our eye on that place for a long time. People go in and out all day long and no one gets a haircut.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Cops, man.
Which is kind of funny because there's a saying in like AA and NA of, you know, it's about when you're in recovery, you don't want to hang out at the same place that you used to use and drink. And they say, you know, if you hang out at the barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. I don't know if that's related to what the cop said, but it's something they say in meetings.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, meaning if you hang out in the bar long enough playing pool and not drinking and drinking coffee, you're eventually going to drink alcohol or, you know, you don't want to go socialize at the crack house when you're in recovery.
Is that part of why you stopped playing live music?
No, I actually played live music after I got sober and was really, really good at being in bars and not being tempted to drink.
How'd you do it?
I would bring a bunch of people from recovery and put them on the guest list, and I would hang out with them more than I'd hang out with people in general in the club. Okay. And I would drink, you know, sodas with, I would drink, you know, Diet Coke, in a booze glass, but because they'd give it to me in a booze glass, but I drank Diet Coke anyway. So I would just, and you know, really for me, like the thing about performance is really being high on the moment.
Yes.
And, it is. You know, so I was like, I was playing rock and roll and there were lots of, you know, people getting their rocks off. Yeah. And it was like, there weren't, unlike LA where everybody in recovery is in a band and everybody in a band's in recovery, in San Francisco, there wasn't really a good band of people in recovery. And so we were kind of like, you know how when like the kid gets out of the hood and becomes the basketball star, or he's on his way, you know, like everyone rallies around him. It was kind of like that. It was kind of like, wow, I have, you know, the sober people were like, I have a reason to go to a bar tonight and not drink and hang out with people who aren't drinking and be with the cool kids who aren't drinking, you know?
Ah, okay. Okay. Well, that's good. It worked out for you then.
Well, yeah, but you know, I never liked
you stop. I don't know if we've ever gone into that.
Okay. I never liked bars even when I was drinking obsessively. I liked to go see music and I would drink in bars to go see music or play music, but I hated bars. I would rather stay home and drink, partially because it was cheaper and I could get drunker for the same amount of money by far. You know, I mean, in a bar, it's really easy to spend $40 or $100 in a night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even drinks, $40 in a night. And you know, if you're at home, $10 can get you loaded, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's booze.
That's usually how I drink, is at home or by my own and with people. But, I think bars are nice every now and then occasionally for that, especially, you know, themed bars. Luckily, there's a lot of competition in Austin. Yeah. There's, you know, Sixth Street, which is a big happening place and it's a good place.
I've been drunk on Sixth Street. I've played on Sixth Street.
Yeah. I've done both of those on Sixth Street as well. I even tackled Frank to the ground in front of a bunch of cops on Sixth Street, and they broke us up.
There weren't There weren't that many cops as there are. From
oh,
what you
there
say now.
Are now.
When
man.
I was
yes,
there, when
awful.
I was there, it was. I probably would have gotten arrested. I mean, I remember like. Hang on a sec.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, now you can hear my ringtone.
Ah, yeah. Makes me want to play Sky Zone on Sonic the Hedgehog number 2.
It's my dad.
He's been calling you a lot lately,
he
huh?
He has been calling. He's bugging me. I mean, calling me a lot. Yeah. I love him.
Oh, yeah. Good times.
He just
good
happens times. To, he just seems like he happens to always call while we're casting.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I was trying to get to is there's this really great concept bar. Last time I went to Sixth Street, they have free arcade games, like from all the classic era, and they're completely free. They charge a lot for their drinks, but we were already kind of buzzed, so we went in there and got like a $7 Long Island iced tea and just nursed it and played NBA Jam and Mortal Kombat for an hour. But I like it when people try new, interesting things. I guess what I'd like to see more than anything, though, is different intoxicant options at bars. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like as an intoxicant, for me, liquor and alcohol, it's nowhere near like the top list.
They're pretty bad, man. The legal ones are pretty bad. I mean, the legal ones are what? Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. No, alcohol, tobacco, and coffee. And like, yeah. I don't do alcohol, but I do a lot of tobacco and coffee. And they're not really pleasurable drugs. I mean, they're kind of cigarettes, kind of relaxing and stimulating. And coffee kind of coffee is more kind of like a vitamin to me at this point. I'm so kind of dependent on it that
you need it. Yeah,
you know. And you know, some people say, oh well, you just traded your heroin addiction for coffee, but you know, coffee's not killing me and I'm not in prison, so that's fine with me. And also heroin kind of stopped working, whereas coffee still kind of works.
Yeah, coffee definitely works for me, and I love it. But I really wonder, though, what what drugging and self-medicating options would be most popular, sans
pot,
the war on drugs,
pot,
sans
man,
the state.
Pot.
I think pot would be hugely popular, but what about as a stimulant? Do you think it would still be coffee? You think there'd be some kind of low-dose cocaine? Or what? I mean, Coca-Cola was really popular.
I actually think, low-dose
cocaine.
Speed and meth are the two big kind of illegal
stimulants. I don't think meth would have ever been popularized without the war on drugs.
Yeah, I actually I don't know if this is true or not, but from my experience, it seems to be true to me that there are people who can recreationally use coke.
Yeah.
And I've never met anyone who does speed regularly, semi-regularly, who doesn't end up just fiending for it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean,
I've never done speed, and in the past, I've never done coke like more than once in like 6 months, so I never really felt like I was addicted to it.
Well, coke was in Coca-Cola, you're right, in the late 1800s. You know, the coca in Coca-Cola is coca leaves.
It's cocaine, yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, low dose
cocaine. And it was a
low
dose, and yeah, I mean, if the thing is, the doses are pushed to where you get effed up because you want a bang for your buck. And the dealers want to sell you a bang for your buck because it's so risky for them. If there wasn't the violence of the state, then, you know, you could have, children's cocaine and granny level cocaine.
Flintstones chewable morphine, as they say on The Simpsons.
Right.
So you asked how I got off. Do you want to know how I got off and what happened?
Not how you got off drugs, but how you stopped. How you stopped being, you know, in a rock musical band, as your dad would put it.
A rock? Did he say that? He
yes,
said that twice.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite thing your dad ever said. Is
Michael
funnier
was in
to me than Obama's speech thing? No, because he didn't say Michael was in. He goes, Nima, did you? He goes,
wait, do his voice. Do the old white man voice, even if
well,
it's not
first,
his voice.
First he asked me, he goes, I just have one thing to ask Nima. What are your hobbies? And after I explained, you know, music, he goes, oh, did you know that Michael was in a rock musical band? And I was like, yes, in fact, I did.
It sounds like something on Saturday Night Live, man. It really does.
It does.
You know, like if they were writing an unhip old white guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love my dad.
How did you stop being in a rock musical band?
Well, first, there's one thing I wanted to interject about bars, because I never really finished that, was
all right.
I have kind of a unique worldview on being in crowds and in public. And I'm not saying like I'm special because of it, but I don't know a lot of people that feel like I do, which is basically I hate crowds. I don't like being around them. I avoid them at all costs. However, I am completely, completely comfortable getting up in front of a crowd of people and talking, which there aren't a lot of people like that. Usually people that are comfortable getting up in front of crowds either love crowds, or they are people who, people who don't like crowds are terrified of crowds and have some sort of like phobia about it. I have no phobia about it.
I'm like that. And maybe that's why we work well together, is I've always felt the same way. When I was in second grade, I did a play and some lady called me a natural, and I played an old man. Actually, I was like, I had to walk up to hell both ways in the snow, and everybody loved it. And since then, or I don't know if I just had a natural knack for it, but since then, I've always felt more comfortable up on the stage when everybody's looking at me. And I think what it is you're the center of attention. You sort of have a captive audience. And so it's not really like you're the communication. It is two-way because they give you feedback through applause and laughter. But really, you're the dominant one in the relationship. And I think that's why I like it.
Well, another way that I've said the same thing is, you know, someone once asked me, why are you in a rock band if you hate crowds? And I said, it's not crowded on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great way to put it too. And it does make you high. Like you said earlier, when you got your rocks off, when I did that live show, which was the first time I'd done live music in 4 or 5 years, I had forgotten how good it felt. And yeah, I was live on TV when I was a reporter, like especially in Wyoming, like literally every day I was live on TV, talking to a camera, and reading a script that you wrote 30 minutes before. Is so much different than, you know, being in a musical situation, especially if there's any, you know, improvisation involved. Just that feeling of risk and the feeling of satisfaction.
Well, I was thinking about what you did. I was thinking about podcasting and broadcasting and radio the other day. And we kind of do have a crowd. I mean, we definitely have a crowd, an audience. And right. I don't really envision it as a crowd, though. I envision it as we're talking to one person. I mean, we do say fiends and address the fiends collectively, but that's not collectively in the sense of Obama collectivism. It's collective in the sense of inclusive. It's including them in us. Although we're capital F fiends, they're small F fiends. But
well, that's how it's consumed too. Is it's one person listening to us while they're in the garden on their headphones,
right?
Watching squirrels or pigeons.
yeah. We're not. You know, it's not like they simulcast and people go into an auditorium and they put us on speakerphone there. You know,
except for the people in what was it, Canada or someplace in the north that used to play us at a coffee shop.
Yeah.
A while back. Well, maybe
but,
they still
you know,
do that.
Coffee shop is generally, you know, 10 or 20 people who aren't really paying attention to each other. They're kind of individuals at
their
own tables.
They're on their phones and they're reading blog. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is really weird because I talked to DJ about this and we've both been to a lot of coffee shops. I've performed a lot of them. Neither of us can say we've ever been to a coffee shop where they're playing talk radio. I've been to a few places of business where people play NPR. But I've never been to a coffee shop where they're playing talk radio. They always play music if they play anything because people want to talk. And talking will not be background if you're talking. It'll be intrusive.
Exactly.
Let's go sell some stuff.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride.
Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
So, you know, the thing about having a radio show or having a podcast or having a streaming radio show is it's kind of, here's what I came up with last night. It's kind of like inviting the world in a selective way into your man cave. Like, I don't really, man cave is a place in the house where the man builds that's like his sanctuary away from his wife. And I'm not really like that. Like, I don't need a sanctuary for my wife. And she's often sitting in a chair next to me while I'm doing this. But I need a place that's kind of my little, like, world. And I've got that.
It's so important to have a workspace, too. Yeah. I mean, we do work, you know, do work. And it's important to have a place to do that in. I mean, I couldn't do this in the living room while people are watching Futurama or Parks and Rec. Yeah. And I mean, I got to have a place to work. I love my workspace, and it is kind of my man cave. I'm just sad that like an eighth of it has to be dedicated to women's clothing because it's also the closet.
Well, yeah, DJ and I have separate rooms, though, but we have more room than you do.
You do, yeah. We have a big apartment. You have a whole basement.
Like, we have a
our
house.
Apartment is we have a big apartment. You guys have a house, but our apartment's probably as big as the first floor of your house. But you guys,
and I don't really use the basement that much. I mean, I did when you were here because we were working down there, but it's mostly storage right now.
I loved the basement as a workspace. I loved that you had that recording booth in the closet.
I haven't used that in a year, man. I've actually found that. I mean, I probably would use it again if I were making a movie to do DJ's voiceover.
I don't think you need a booth if you have a dynamic mic.
You really don't. I have a dynamic mic, and we went and got these carpets at Walmart. They look really nice. Like, somebody saw a picture of them and was like, oh, where'd you get those Indian wall hangings? And I'm like, $30 at Walmart. I mean, they're probably 3 feet by 5 feet. And they're a really nice kind of rug-like pattern, oriental rug kind of pattern. And I have one on my left wall and one on my right wall. And they look like decoration, but they're actually covering part of the two parallel walls where I was getting a little bit of echo in this room. And really without – I mean, right now I have my heater on. You might hear that in the background. It's freezing here.
With the dynamic mic, it cuts out so much
in
the background.
Dynamic mic rocks, man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do a blog post soon. I'm going to do a post on our blog about how to do a podcast and how to do audio because our gear page is kind of like we just kept adding to it and it's kind of confusing at this point. Like, you don't even know what mic we're using now if you read that. But I've got it down to like a really simple, like, okay, if you're starting out and your budget is zero, here's what to do. If you're starting out and your budget's $200, here's what to do. And if you want to do what I do and spend, you know, about $1,000, here's what to do. So nice.
Excuse me, but yeah,
back to
the condenser mic, you needed the booth and you need some kind of thing to get rid of the background,
and you needed it in the basement because, you know, the condenser mics literally pick up, you know, and our house is pretty soundproof, but upstairs they pick up the truck going by out on the street. And we do use the low cut filter on the mixer, which basically cuts out anything that's below the range of the human voice. Like, I have to turn that on when I record bass guitar, but when I'm recording voice, I turn it off when I'm recording bass guitar, but I turn it on for vocals. But back to the man cave thing, I'm gonna break precedent here, and I'm gonna use 5 pictures instead of 1 today for the episode. And it's gonna be those funny radio pictures I've made of guys who aren't us, but it says us, and they're doing radio, and it says Fiends on radio. Because all those pictures show something that doesn't exist much anymore, which is the ham radio hobbyists. They still exist, but it's like it was a big thing when I was a kid, and I knew guys in my town, like old guys, that I'd even go over to the house and watch them do it and hang out with them, who had like 40-foot antennas towering over their house. And they would sit around all day long. It was kind of like Facebook. They would sit around on their, you know, $10,000 worth of equipment and chat with guys in Thailand and China, probably not China, but Thailand and India and England and everywhere in South America, you know. And it was a cool thing to do, and it was a hobbyist thing, and it was kind of exciting because it's one of those things where there's always more to learn. There's people who are helpful with it. There's magazines for it. There were societies for it, clubs for it. And it also enabled you to have what was called a Radio Shack, which is where Radio Shack took its name from, because they used to actually provide the equipment for these people. Your Radio Shack was the place in your house that you dedicated to your ham radio equipment. Ham radio is shortwave. Okay. You have to pass a government test to get a license, and then you spend buttloads of equipment, just, you know, and you can do it with more. People did it with Morse code. And actually, they got to feel really useful and be helpful, because during times of emergency, phones used to go out a lot more than they do now. And they still go out now. And there weren't cell phones or mobile phones. So if there was a hurricane in your area, after the hurricane, if you were someone that people knew as the ham radio operator, very often the firemen or the Red Cross or the police would come to you and say, you know, can you do this for me? And it would be like a list of people. Basically, what you do is you would get on the ham radio and talk to somebody in a different state where they still have power, or in a different county where they still have phone service. And you'd say, can you call these 20 numbers for me and tell these people that their husband is okay, and, you know, they'll find them later. And can you call this pharmacist and say, we need this medicine for this sick old lady. Can someone bring it? You know, that kind of stuff. So ham radio operators actually got to be really useful private sector, like helping out in emergencies.
Right. Nice. Nice. Kind of like an analog Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. And North Korea is one of the only countries that has never issued ham radio licenses and does not allow it.
Now, did the government continue the licensing? Like, do they still license that if you want to do ham radio?
They do. They do. Although it used to be a test where you had to take a Morse code comprehension test and a written test on radio physics and electronics. But they've removed...
So were there illegal ham radio operators and the FCC would like go raid their houses?
About 5 years ago, they removed the Morse code requirement. Now you just have to take the written test. And when I was a kid, I wanted to do it. And I think it was like when you were 14, you could get a license if you had your parents' permission. Mm-hmm. When I was 12, I took some classes to try to get the test because I really wanted to do that. And I passed the written test, which was some pretty deep math for a little kid, math and physics. And I could not pass the Morse code test. I wasn't fast enough.
So it wasn't just Morse code comprehension. You actually had to. It went too fast for you to comprehend what the words were.
It was kind of like taking a typing test. You know, like if you have to. This is kind of ironic. When I finished college, when I went back to college at 30 and actually paid attention and learned to be a secretary more or less. I couldn't pass the typing test. You're supposed to be able to type 25 words a minute, which isn't very fast. 35 words a minute. But they take off for each mistake you made. And the way I type is I type way faster than that, make a lot of mistakes, and can correct them really quickly. And on a computer, my mean typing speed with correcting all my mistakes, like if you give me a book to type from, and I type for 3 minutes, and then, you know, what I would do is I'd type for 2.5 minutes and then go correct all my mistakes. On a computer, I can type about 100 words a minute with no typos, if I'm allowed to correct. But the way they did the test, at least back then, you couldn't go correct it. So if you got a word wrong, it didn't count. And I think it counted against you. But I almost didn't graduate or get my certificate from that class because, you know, I passed everything with flying colors, the computer stuff, the letter writing stuff, the creative writing stuff, but I couldn't pass the typing test with their rules. But the lady let me pass if I promised to get better at it. You know, 5 years later, I was making a living writing, so I showed her, or I made her proud. But back to the ham radio thing, I was very interested in radio from a very young age, and, you know, there was no way back then to feasibly think you could end up on FM and AM radio syndicated. That would just didn't happen. I mean, even people who had talk shows like the pre-Howard Stern types, They weren't syndicated. You know, you'd have the guy in Chicago doing it, the guy in New York doing it. I mean, maybe ABC and NBC radio would have syndication, but they didn't have syndication the way they do now, partially because they didn't have satellites for that.
Right.
And they didn't have internet to send it over.
Right.
But I really wanted to do that. And it was really cool hanging out with these ham radio guys, and they were really helpful and they never molested me, and it was really nice. I just had to say that because it was like I was like 10 hanging out with guys that were 70 in their basement, you know, alone. But it was kind of like they totally had man caves. They totally had these worlds that were like dedicated to one thing and full of all kinds of exotic gear. And I was fascinated with it. And I was like, when I grow up, I'm going to have a place in my house where I do radio. And we do now. And it's like we are man caves that are being shared with the world.
Yeah, exactly. Beautiful. Well, the thing about being molested, being a 10-year-old boy hanging out with these guys is I bet they taught you a lot of important things. And I feel like in the world today, it's always looked down upon that people of a certain age would hang out with people that are older than them. And I think that that's at the detriment to society because...
Yeah, that's how you learn, man. The old folks pass it on to the younger. It's how it's always been, and it's not true so much anymore.
It's not like that anymore, and it's considered creepy and wrong. And, you know, when all kids learn from is 10-year-olds, of course they're going to just do a bunch of 10-year-old crap. And I guess the internet kind of counteracts that a little bit because they can go to different forums of things.
But they don't. They go to forums of other 10-year-olds to learn like how to do 10-year-old crap.
Right.
Speaking of which, you found the weirdest. You found the weirdest graffiti in the world, man.
I did. Yeah, you should post it on today's show. I see graffiti all night because you know I'm hanging around downtown all night, and I found this one, and I was just like, "That's so weird." And it said, "Santa cannot be duplicated," but somebody had edited it to say Santa cannot be pooplicated. And that word pooplicated, I had never heard such a thing, and it was just amazingly hilarious to me.
And DJ suggested that the original thing, Santa cannot be duplicated, was, you know, the tagger's name is Santa. But this is the worst
graffiti
I've ever seen. I think there's a name for that. They just call it writing. No, what do they call it when you're just a scrawler and you don't really have any style and you just scribble?
I don't know, but I wouldn't even call it a scribble. It's just it's just letters, like he was trying to write a message. It's not art. Well, you know, the only art in the sense that it's a poetic kind of in a word.
The only graffiti I ever did in my life was a political statement, in a way. When I lived in Charlottesville, Virginia, a woman was raped by the train tracks by my house. And it was a friend of my girlfriend's friend. You know, it was like somebody we sort of knew. And I was insanely furious about it. I was like, something must be done. And the only thing I could think of to do was to spray on the wall that you could see from those train tracks. I spray painted, "Kill a rapist today." But I did it really quickly, and it was in crappy writing like that. And it wasn't a threat. I wasn't going to kill anybody, but it was just like to scare off rapists and protect women or something. And I sprayed it really quickly, and I didn't put any space between A and rapist, so it looked like it said "kill Arapist today." And I watched college students from UVA walk by it day after day going, "Who's Arapist? Is that some Middle Eastern leader?"
Right.
It sounds like, you know, Shah.
And there were probably people coming around going, America kill number Arapist. One, USA.
I don't know. Back then, the Middle East was kind of an enigma that people didn't really know about or have much of an opinion about. Although there was the kidnapping at the Olympics in the 70s, which, you know, but back then people didn't like judge a whole country. The citizens in general didn't judge a whole country based on the actions of a few as much because the government hadn't gotten in the business so much of doing that.
Of being in every aspect of life all the time. I mean,
And I think that there was a lot of BS detector with people about that, especially young people, because There was no explanation of why we're in the Vietnam War or what was wrong with the Vietnamese people other than they were communist. But it wasn't like now where the government could point to, oh, they do this, this, and this. You know, I mean, it's best summed up by the boxer, what's his name, who said Muhammad Ali said no Viet Cong ever called me nigger. You know, it's like people didn't know anything about Vietnam and had no connection with it, and it was like, why are you over there bombing those people? What? Right. That's insane.
Although it's great to say that quote, and it's a really important quote, but if we're going to be on radio, you probably can never say that word again.
I think even if you're quoting somebody.
Can you?
All right. Well, we've said it about four times on radio.
We have, but it's always been quoting Muhammad Ali, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
I think on radio we'd say Muhammad Ali said, "No Viet Cong ever called me an N-word." Although I think Viet Cong is a slur too, isn't it? Or did they? I don't know.
No, I think Viet Cong was the actual political party. Ah,
okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, I guess with graffiti, there's two different kinds. There's the tag, the art kind, but the kind you're talking about and the kind that Santa cannot be publicated, it's more like it's more like comments on like it's an analog version of the comment section of something.
Yeah.
It's the message, the words that they were trying to get across. Not
kill Arapest today.
Kill Arapest. Yes. that was just the analog version of autocorrect.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Arapest. But yeah, man. Let's go ahead and sell some things.
So a little early. We got some more time here, unless you got to pooplicate.
I got to pooplicate.
Okay.
Ugh, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to lolat?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to freedomfiends.com.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a torrent club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
So, Nima, you had follow-ups.
Yo, yeah, I was going to say, we're talking about Merca and Kill Arapest, and I chanted, USA, USA, during the Second Amendment or pro-defense, however you want to look at it, rally the other day. Somebody started screaming, USA, USA, when Sheriff Mack was speaking, and it didn't really catch on, but then somebody started chanting, Texas, 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 and everybody started chanting along, and I was like, if we could just go one step further and just like chant,
My house. Let them all go to hell except for Cave 79.
Yeah.
You know what that's from?
Is that SNL?
No, it's Mel Brooks. It's two cavemen talking about
History of the World Part 1 or something.
Saying how back in the cave, when we were a caveman, each cave had its own national anthem.
Nice.
It's kind of a libertarian thought.
Yeah, yeah. The only other thing, a little tidbit I had for this last segment, before we get into what we teased earlier, which was how you stopped playing live music in a rock musical band, is somebody tipped me a 12-ounce can of Bud Light last night because they were at
a poker. Did you report it on your taxes?
No. They were at a poker party, and they were trying to wrangle up tips, and they actually tipped me cash pretty well, too. Cross that out. No, this is all they tipped me, and I'm looking at the can right now, and how it advertises itself, it says superior drinkability. Like, how sad is the world of cheap American lagers that has to be the selling point? Is that it's drinkable?
I would say it's not even superior drinkability. I think a lot of Europeans would say if it's, you know, drinkable, that's worth mentioning. If it's American beer, yeah.
Well, it's like if you went to McDonald's and it said our food now edible or now more edible. Yay! I mean, drinkable, now edible. That's your advertisement.
Well, I think drinkability used to be a term, but. I haven't heard.
Yeah,
it in
I don't.
A while.
I don't know why, man. Beer should taste good. It shouldn't. I mean, obviously, it's drinkable. If it's beer, it's beer.
Yeah, I never liked. I guess we're gonna get into why I quit drinking. I never liked the taste of alcohol. I never liked it, and I only ever drank it for the effect. And I always bought the cheapest crap I could that had the highest alcohol content. Because
like Colt 45 malt liquor, stuff like that, or would you dip down that level?
Anything, whatever I could get, or liquor, you know.
So if you were around today, you would have been a Four Loko drinker.
I guess. I don't even know what that is.
It was banned for a little bit because it mixed alcohol and caffeine. And like some kid overdosed on it in Washington State. He like drank too many of them and maybe he died or was hospitalized.
You know, where
Congress was like, let's ban it.
And whereas like, how are you going to stop? How are you going to ban just drinking a beer and a coffee, you know?
Right, right. Or
drinking four beer and four coffees.
That's a popular drink. Well, what they did was Four Loko came back. They retooled their formula. And now instead of being a mix of alcohol and caffeine, it's just the most alcohol you can get at a gas station for your buck. It's 12% alcohol. And it's, of course, carbonated. So it's like you're drinking champagne and you get 24 ounces of it for like $2. It tastes awful, but it does the trick. So you would have drank that if you were around.
Probably. Although I never really liked anything fermented, and I'm not a big fan of bread, yeast. I mean, I don't have problems digesting it. I don't have candida or anything. I don't produce it out of my pores. But I don't really like anything that's fermented. I kind of agree with the Rastas on that. Like, they don't drink alcohol, partially because they think it's a bad drug that confuses you and lets Babylon control you. But also because they say, like, they don't eat pickles. Also, because anything that's pickled or fermented, they say, is like turning your body into a graveyard, you know, because you're taking like dead yeast into it. My body kind of has that reaction to yeast. I'm not allergic to it. I just go like, garbage.
They're cool with putting dead animal flesh. I mean, I don't see how that's.
Some of them are vegetarian, and some of them, lot of them only eat fish. Fish are a really big part, and it's a religious thing. It's because of Jesus and the fish and the loaves, I think.
Ah, okay.
But how did I get off drugs and alcohol?
Because we get off of everything.
Because we what?
Because we get off of everything.
What do you mean?
I mean, we jump around a lot.
Oh. No, I'm getting back to something we teased earlier. So I'm doing it right.
Circle.
Yeah, okay. It's just concentric circles within parenthetical inclusions.
Caniacal.
Caniacal. DJ Caniacal.
Yeah.
I guess the basic short form answer is the same that's a lot of people's answer when you ask them this question. I was sick of tired of being sick and tired.
Okay. I see what you're saying. So it was just too much stress for you to be up late rocking and partying?
Nah, I'm always up. Yeah, I have trouble being up late. Dude, I went to bed at 8:30 this morning. I don't have a problem being up all night.
Yeah, but you sit in the same chair. You don't like.
I get out of the chair.
At the top of your lungs. Into a microphone.
I go in and talk to DJ. wait a minute. What do you mean? I don't yell at the top of my lungs. I'm yelling at the. I mean, I have a microphone in front of me most of the time now.
Yeah, you do. But you're calmer. Well, maybe you're not.
I'm calmer.
Know.
I am calmer.
Okay, fine.
I'm calmer
so
than when.
Further then.
I'm calmer. DJ tells me often how much calmer and mellower and sweeter I am than I was 8 years ago when she met me. And I'd been sober for a long time by then.
Okay.
You know, what? That's another thing they say in meetings is, you know, just because you get sober doesn't mean you're struck wonderful.
Yeah.
A lot of people get sober and they're bigger a-holes than they were drunk because they don't have the medication to like calm down the weasels in their brain.
Right, right.
Basically, if you're an alcoholic or an addict, which is, you know, an alcoholic is just, let's say an addict, because alcoholism is an addiction to alcohol, even if you're not physically addictive, it's addictive behavior. I was not physically addicted to alcohol. I didn't have DTs when I stopped taking alcohol. I did not need to be hospitalized to kick alcohol. I basically, alcohol was getting me in a lot of trouble because it made me nasty, verbally. I never like hit women or anything like that, or, you know, but I got into, you know, I'm 5 foot five. And when I drank, I was about 9 foot 13. And I would go up to, you know, bouncers in front of bars and be like, dude, you're fat. Why are you so fat? You're a big fat dum-dum. You know, I would
you're
try
a big
to
fat dum-dum.
Yeah. Or, you know, that's the radio version of what I would say.
And I like it better. It's funny.
And I would go up to guys that like kind of looked like bikers. You know, they weren't, I don't know, they're bikers. They were motorcycle enthusiasts. They were, I never did this to any real bikers, but I guess I had some sense of survival in my system. But I would go up to like tough dudes that could beat me with one punch that had their arm around their girlfriend at a bar and start flirting with the girl in front of the guy. I never got the crap beat out of me, but I was headed that way. So when I discovered opiates, when I discovered heroin, it cured my alcoholism. I went from being out in public, you know, getting into trouble, almost getting beat to death, to like sitting calmly in my home, you know, strumming on an acoustic guitar and not hurting anybody and not being mean. That's what heroin did for me. And I literally like just forgot about alcohol. That happened when I was about 22. And I had a longer, like it's working for me period with heroin than most people do. Most people who do heroin, basically shooting heroin every day for 3 or 4 weeks will give you a physical habit. But I never did that. I shot it about once a week for like a year and a half, and then worked up to about twice a week and didn't have to do much at first. I'd do like $7 worth and be like mellow and beautiful and wonderful all night. And since I wasn't doing it every day, I didn't get a tolerance to it like you do when you're doing it every day, to where you have to, you end up doing $100 a day worth to even not be sick, let alone not get high. So what happened was then my band went on tour and we were gone for 10 days. And around the, you know, and at that point I was doing it 2 or 3 times a week. But I couldn't get any on tour, or just didn't bother to try, or, you know, I just didn't take any for about 10 days. And near the end of that, I thought I had a really bad flu. I was sick as a dog. And when I got home, my girlfriend actually met me at the airport with a loaded syringe. And I shot up in the airport parking lot in my van. And she drove me home. And then she did some. We didn't drive high. But, you know, and then I didn't have my flu anymore. I was like, oh, I guess my flu's gone. And then the next morning, my flu started coming back, or the next, you know, evening. And then it hit me. I have a physical habit. You know, it wasn't a flu. It was similar symptoms. But, being dope sick, being going through withdrawal, basically feels like the flu plus you're twitchy. Like they call it kicking dope, because when you're kicking dope, your legs literally kick. When you try to sleep, when you lie down, when you relax, you kick. A friend of mine described it as slam dancing in a sleeping bag, and it's pretty accurate.
Wow, that does sound awful though, doesn't it?
And it's a really, really unpleasant feeling.
Yeah.
You're itchy. Yeah, I
can imagine.
And you just feel, the way I described it is it feels like someone skinned you, dipped you in salt, and then put your skin back on.
Now, what about things, are there other drugs, maybe even illegal drugs that can help with that? I mean,
yeah, Valium.
Valium? What about pot? I remember when I was hungover, a little pot might help.
Well,
out.
I quit smoking pot. I started smoking pot when I was 11 on and off. And I quit smoking pot about the time I was old enough to legally drink. I never tapped anybody. I never went up and said, hey, can you get me some booze? Basically, because I was at a boarding school where you couldn't do that. And then in the summer, you know, when I was 16, 17, I would just steal my parents' booze, because they had a lot of booze around, but they didn't drink, but they entertained clients and friends who drank. So I would just steal it and then water it down. And eventually they figured that out. But so, yeah, I smoked a little pot around the time I was 11, but, you know, all through school, I couldn't really get a hold of it. So when I was like 17 and went to college, I started smoking as much as I could. And then when I was like 21 and could buy beer, I was just off to the races. And actually earlier than that, because when I was 17, I was in college, but I was living in a house with four other guys, two of whom were over, you know, it was the drinking age was 18 then. So they would buy it for me. So I went into the kitchen and hey, mister people. I didn't go to the 7-Eleven.
Do you have regrets?
I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I've lived a life that's full. I've traveled each and every byway. No.
Beautiful.
I have no regrets.
No. Okay, good, good.
Not really, man.
Made you the person you are today, right?
Yeah, because I always know when to change the channel. A lot of drug
except
addicts.
Except when you're watching CSI, apparently.
Right, right. And I have comments about that. A lot of people who do drugs and alcohol, what they say is an analogy is, you know, I drove my car until it was in the ditch and then kept driving. Basically, I drove it in the ditch and then got out of the ditch with alcohol and then with heroin. Mm-hmm. And I've been clean since 94. And basically what happened was I was broke. An interesting thing was I was broke and strung out and needed about $50 a day to feel well, you know, to not be sick and not get high at all. And about $100 a day to get high. And I couldn't do that anymore without committing crimes. And I didn't want to commit crimes. And I got sober, which is really rare. Most people that get into hard drugs, because they're illegal, because they're so expensive, because of the government, they turn to crime. And I didn't. Mm-hmm. I think at one point I stole some of my roommate's CDs and sold them and then admitted it to him. And that was the only like real crime I ever committed. And then I paid him back when I got sober, like really quickly. Like I went and worked construction with him. He got me a job working construction and digging ditches. And I paid him back over, you know, a couple months time. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And a lot of people have to go into inpatient to kick. I didn't. And I'd kicked a bunch of times. I'd, you know, stopped for anywhere between, you know, 2 weeks and 4 months a bunch of times. I was addicted on and off for 5 years. And longer than that, 7 years, because I got clean when I was 30, like 2 weeks before my 30th birthday, and have been clean since. Except for one little relapse that, you know, lasted a couple days and then I never went back. So, which was in 99. So I've been sober since 99. And
so what made you stop playing music though? Was it related? Was it about the same time? Well, I guess it wasn't about the same time.
It was time to change the channel, man. It was time to change the channel. I was never able to replicate the magic and the majesty of the band Bomb in any of my later bands, my sober bands.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it was because once I got sober, I wouldn't be in a band with people who were, you know, junkies or drunks. I'd be in a band with people who bring a beer to practice and spend 4 hours drinking it. But, you know, a lot of the best musicians have substance abuse problems and it's really hard. I couldn't be in a band with them. And also I didn't want to start from phase one again and build it up from the beginning. And I remember when my band Bomb broke up, we were pretty popular. And basically why we broke up, you know, the band came to me and they said, look, you just keep using heroin and you keep stopping and you keep relapsing and you got to stop or we're quitting your band. They couldn't kick me out because I was the most important member of it. But they said, we're quitting your band. You know, you won't have a band. And I thought about it for a minute. Actually, I said, let me think about it and I'll tell you tomorrow. And they were kind of like, really? That's your answer? That was kind of already their answer, you know, like, oh, if he has to think about it, screw him. But I came back the next day and I said, go ahead and quit. I'm going to replace you all. And I tried that and I could not get guys that could play like them and be like them. And there was a magic to those people, those four people on stage that I couldn't replicate. So I said, I'll start another band. So I started a couple other bands. One was a band Slish, which I've told you all about. And they, you know, almost got signed, but we were just arguing on stage because we were two newly sober guys who didn't really have much recovery yet. We were kind of dry drunks. And What I didn't want to be was like other people I knew that were older than me that had been in popular bands. They weren't sober, but they were like 40-year-old guys who were kind of fat but wearing leather pants and tight shirts, and they were kind of balding, but they were still rocking out like they were 17. Mm-hmm. And playing the same, like playing the same little clubs. They say you meet the same people on the way up as you do on the way down, and it's very true. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to be 40 and working as a bike messenger and playing once a week at the Chatterbox in San Francisco to the same 40 people while I get fat and bald, you know? And yeah. So I basically learned to be a writer and then learned to be a filmmaker and then learned to be a podcaster. And now we're learning to be radio hosts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was thinking about that the other day is there's nothing like that feeling of being on stage doing live music, but unless you're really big, our audience is so much bigger doing podcasting, man. I mean, so many people hear what we say each podcast and they listen to all three shows a week. There's so many people who do that.
Yeah.
Even if you play the biggest club on 6th Street, it's like 300-400 people.
Yeah, we play to 5,000 people every week. They're just not in one auditorium. They're in their bedrooms.
So you don't get that amazing real-time feedback, but we have such great fans, you know, the Fiends, that we still do get great feedback. We get people who email us to talk back. We get comments on our posts, and some people are like, well, I hear Nima doesn't read these or respond to these. I do read them. I don't always or ever. I should respond more, but I do read all of them because they come to my email automatically. So don't think that I'm not reading those. I am reading those, and those are amazing. And it is great. I always tell people whenever I get a great comment on Facebook or something, because I do respond to those. I say, you know, that's why I do it. I'm sure that's why you do it too. So usually I'll say that's why we do it, you know, is because people say, hey, you know, you really help. You help my life. You help me think about things. You know, I used to be a statist and now I'm not. Things like
that. I love
that.
Like, yeah, I love yeah, that. That's my favorite comment, and that keeps me going, and we get it over and over.
Totally. Totally. Because so that's the thing, man, is that's how you get a free society. And so knowing that you helped to create the environment, the non-government modified environment, that really is why we do it. And it really, it's a snowball effect. The more we do it, the more we'll do this, and then the bigger each side will get.
I think that's a good stopping place, unless you got more. That sounded very final to me.
Positive and final and
very positive.
Got plenty of time here, we've done plenty of time here. So, I can't stress enough how much we enjoy doing this for you, Fiends, and it's really you guys that makes us want to do it.
Worms. I got something I want to fiend source, though. I want to know what people think of the term Obama gun care for what Obama's doing with guns. Does it sound
Obama
too
took
nice?
Away my gun.
You know, I guess it doesn't really work because Obama care is horrible and fascist, but it includes healthcare, whereas Obama gun care is horrible and fascist and doesn't help your health and could get you killed and get children killed.
They would say it includes your protection because they're taking the guns away, so it includes your increased safety.
Yeah,
they're wrong.
Let me know how that works out for them.
But that's how they think of it. And
which is not a threat. I'm just saying, like, I mean, I'm going to be the one reporting on it from the news, from my powerful telescope in Wyoming.
Saying I told you so.
Yeah, saying I told you so, basically. We'll say it now.
Okay. Cool, man. Well,
worms.
Have a good one, Michael, and have a good one, Fiends.
Thank you, Nima. Thank you, Fiends.
Yep. Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy, me, from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me, and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission, and I won't say please. Freedom Fiends, what fact that I gotta make?
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.
We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.